This is LifeMint.com and you're listening to the Mint Editors Podcast with me, Nandita Mathur, and Mint's editor, R. Sukumar. So the first story we discuss is from the telecom sector, where Bharti Airtel has announced that it's going to acquire Telenor India's operations. So what do you think this means for Airtel and for the telecom sector in general?
I think in one word, consolidation. Bound to happen in a sector like telecom. I think in a lot of sectors, actually. I mean, what does India have typically? You look at a variety of industries. India has good companies, but many of these are, by global standards, subscale companies. They don't have the size or the capacity to really count as a global major in the industry in which they operate. And I think telecom is one such case where, of course, thanks to the government's own policies, because the original policy was fine. The new telecom policy of 1999, although in 2017 to call something that was done in 1999 new seems strange. But the new telecom policy of 1999 envisaged four telecom companies in each circle or each operating area. Three of these would be private and one of these would be the state-owned company. And that was the deal. But then they changed it. And in 2008, they were fairly indiscriminate in their issue of licenses. As it turns out, not just indiscriminate, but also in some cases criminal in how these licenses and spectrum were allotted. So they cannot be a business case to support all these companies. And that's what you're seeing. And there's a complete collapse that has happened as far as the financials of some of these smaller telecom companies are concerned. It is a process that has been hastened by the entry of Reliance Jio. And I think from Airtel's perspective, it's a move to sort of consolidate itself and strengthen itself against Reliance Jio. And I want to add here, the fact that Reliance Jio will charge starting April is a good thing. It's a good thing not just for Reliance, but it's also a good thing for the industry, because you will get price stability. It's not necessarily a good thing for people like you and me who get things for free. But in the larger interest of business, I think it's good for shareholders of these companies. It's good for price stability and price strengthening in the telecom sector. You can't have, obviously you can't have lower tariffs than free, but you can't have that kind of tariff policy. And let's make no mistake about it. Mukesh Ambani, who owns Reliance, is not doing this business for charity. He wants to make money. So I'm glad that they've decided to start charging now that they've acquired 100 million customers. Remains to be seen how many they will keep. So you look at the macro thing, what are you seeing? You're seeing consolidation. You're also seeing price stabilization. So you're actually going to see this sector come out of the turbulence that it has been exposed to over the last several years. Again, may mean good things for the customer in terms of service, will definitely not mean good things for the customer in terms of pricing. All our bills will go up.
So moving on, we look at the issue of share buybacks in the IT sector, which is a rather complex issue and sort of started off by Cognizant Technology announcing that it would initiate a buyback. But what do you think it means? I mean, is it good, bad? I mean, it's definitely good for the shareholders because they're returning money.
No, it just boils down to one thing, okay, Nandita. And that is simply, IT companies are all tremendously cash rich. The amount of cash and cash equivalent they have on their books is not funny. And this is not just true for these companies. I mean, you look at Microsoft and before they issued those huge bonuses, the kind of cash they had on their books. And it's always a challenge. How do you put this cash to good use? Now, across companies, irrespective of the sector, when a company has cash on its books, shareholders are going to say, if you're not going to use it productively, give it to us.
Right.
And they do have a right, right? I mean, it's because it's cash generated in the course of business. And companies like Infosys have not done so. Sure, they've given dividends and all that, but they've not really gone out and done buybacks. And I think this is probably an interesting trend that we are seeing in the IT space. In this particular wave of buybacks, the action first happened in Cognizant, where activist investor Elliott Management pushed them into declaring a buyback, $3.4 billion, I think it was. And then investors in Indian companies started demanding their own buybacks, TCS and Infosys. Infosys, which was going through all sorts of other issues between the founder, promoters, and the current management and the board. And I think they're also part of the, one reason for the amplification or one of the many sore points is related to the buybacks, is related to the fact that you have so much cash on your books, which you're not sharing. I mean, previously, there have been a couple of public demands by people associated with Infosys in the past. Its two former CFOs, for instance, said it'll be good if they did a buyback. And shareholders have always demanded it. And that's exactly what you're seeing. If you have the cash and if you can use it to buy companies which will help increase your revenue, make you future-proof and everything else, I don't think shareholders would have a problem with it, as long as these acquisitions are well thought of, strategic, and all above board in terms of how the mergers are conducted, acquisitions are conducted. If you're not going to do that, it makes very little sense to have that cash on your books. You just have to give it to shareholders, and that's what you're seeing. It's a good move. I mean, there's nothing wrong with buybacks. It's an extremely good move.
Okay. Coming to the startup space, we have again Snapdeal, which announced job cuts, and the co-founder said that they're going to take no pay, basically. And he also admitted, Kunal Behl, that we've made some errors. You know, so what is this whole thing about? Because every few days, few weeks, we hear of these startups.
Yeah, I think part of it is also, let me be honest, how media covers them, including us. I mean, we all get very carried away and go to town about this whole thing. But I think we normally like to think of these job cuts as a sign of failure, as a sign of collapse and all that. I'm not so sure. I mean, and I want us to look at it with a little more rationality. I think in many of these cases, these were young entrepreneurs and young companies which suddenly became flush with funds because they were investors willing to put that much money. And the minute you have lots of money, you obviously start spending it, right? I mean, your cost structure goes up.
Yeah.
And realigning cost structure is not a bad thing. I mean, if you were to ask me, Hero MotoCorp has just come off a huge cost restructuring exercise. L&T has rationalized its manpower. I mean, HDFC Bank has done so. So I don't think you should isolate Snapdeal in terms of what's happening there in terms of people. I think many of these organizations grew very fast. When you grow fast, you're not looking at rational workforce strength. So clearly, you have to reduce your workforce at some point in time. There's also a technology aspect to it in terms of automation and all that. But by and large, an emphasis on cost reduction is actually good. I think the two things that startups across the country, especially those in e-commerce, will have to focus on is revenue. And when I say revenue, I don't mean the inflated gross merchandise value number that some of them tout, but real money, as in how much money are we making, revenue. So if you're selling something in which your take is 10 rupees, then the 10 rupees is your revenue, not the 1,000 rupees for which you're selling that thing. 10 rupees. The other thing that they should do, so they should look at maximizing their revenue and focus sharply on their revenue, not so much their gross merchandise value. And they should focus on their costs, which means rational discounts. You can't hope to keep discounting forever, which means rational manpower, rational technology, rational technology costs. And then you have to do those things. And I think the smarter companies are the companies that will focus both on revenue and on costs. So it's happening. And I guess you will see it happening in a lot more companies. I don't think it's bad. I actually think it's good. Just like I don't necessarily think a down round is bad. I mean, if all these are, I sometimes think, and maybe I'm being a little too generous here, but I sometimes think that we are probably a little too harsh on a lot of these companies, right? I mean, one day they are the toast of town.
Yeah.
And you write about their super valuations and their young entrepreneurs and everything else. And the next day, they make their first mistake or their second mistake or their third mistake or whatever it is. And then you sort of lambast them.
Yeah.
I think it's a good move that many of these companies are starting to focus on real revenue. I think it's a good move that they're moving away from discounting. I think it's a good move that they're beginning to focus on costs. And if all this helps build a healthier startup ecosystem, and I think it's damn good.
Yeah, but most of these founders, I mean, they start off with such inflated salaries themselves, and then they announce that now we are going to take 100%, you know, salary cut.
I'm not sure. Again, I know for a fact that in many of the startups, including the startup you've mentioned as well as other startups, the founders' salaries are not very high. It may look high because all of them do what's called a secondary sale. Yeah. So every time a stake is sold to an investor,
right,
they probably sell a little bit. So they're cashing out to some extent. And you could cash out for a variety of reasons. People cash out to buy a house. People cash out because they want to raise the money. They want to raise some, they want that money so that they can invest in other companies,
right,
which is actually a fairly big trend. So I think those numbers tend to get mixed up a little bit. But it is a fact that at least in some of these startups, may not necessarily be Snapdeal, or could be Snapdeal to some extent, but you look at a lot of other companies. A lot of companies did hire very expensive resources from the consumer packaged goods industry, from the consulting business and all that. But I don't think you should say that these founders are paying themselves a huge salary, because in many cases, the founders are not paying themselves a huge salary. It just seems that way because they, every time a transaction happens, they're probably selling a little bit of their own stake, what's called a secondary, and then they're making a little bit of money.
Okay. So moving to the banking sector, the State Bank of India is going to merge with five of its associate banks on the 1st of April. And after the merger, SBI is set to be among the top 50 large banks of the world. So what do you think of this move?
I'm actually divided about this move because India doesn't have a large bank, right? I mean, you look at China, it's got large banks. You get the US, you have large banks. India doesn't have large banks. So obviously, for a long time, the rallying cry has been, we need a large bank, we need a large bank. But the thing is, we also need more banks. We need smaller banks. We need specialized banks.
Right.
Because it's a hugely underbanked population. So I would like us to look at it in terms of how the merged entity would be. The merged entity will have a consolidated balance sheet of rupees 32 trillion, deposits of 26 trillion, and 18.76 trillion of advances or loans on its books. It will have 24,000 branches and nearly 275,000 employees. I think those are very significant numbers. But I think we will also have to see what SBI can do with this additional size that it has got. Because you mentioned that it is now in the top 50 that it is, but it was previously 52. So it's clearly moved up a few places. But pride is not a reason to do this. I mean, the fact that India has a bank in the top 50 is no big deal. I think what would be important is to see what the merger does to the asset quality of SBI. Because some of these banks don't have a particularly high asset quality. So clearly one will have to see that. And then, of course, there are various other issues related to the merger, including the fact that the unions don't seem particularly happy with it and all that. But the bottom line is, I think it makes sense to focus on building a large bank when you can really derive the benefits of being a large bank. And I mean, when you are a large bank, the kind of projects you can underwrite, for instance, will be huge. You can really support the kind of infrastructure requirements that a country like India needs. I think it makes sense. But I'm not sure that at this point in time, it's going to make such a big difference. We'll have to wait and see how SBI manages this transition and how it uses the extra size that it has got and how the integration process goes.
Finally, we end with two reports, one from the IMF and one was a Reuters poll, which are saying that demonetization is going to pull down India's GDP growth, you know, to 6%. And the Reuters poll also says that the Q4 economic growth sort of seen slowing down to a near three-year low. So it seems that demonetization did have some kind of a negative impact.
Yeah, I mean, definitely. And we've always maintained that, right? I mean, even our newsroom, which otherwise believes that cashless is good, the short-term impact of demonetization will obviously be negative. And you're seeing that in the shrinking of demand for various products, from packaged consumer products to motorcycles. And I don't think the system is still recovered from that sudden shock. And it is recovering. And if you look at even the IMF report, it says that the second half of 2016-17, which is the quarter between October 2016 and end of March 2017, will be bad. But after that, you will see a recovery. We ourselves have carried a report looking at earnings estimates of companies that points out that things may not be very good in 2017-18 also. But I think it's too early to say. You'll have to watch for a variety of factors. So it's far too early to say that 2017-18 things will be bad. So short-term impact, our sense is it's beginning to recover. We'll have to see how it goes.
So those were Sukumar's top stories for this week. Do let us know what you think. You can email us at feedback@livemint.com or follow us at Livemint on Twitter and Mint on Facebook. Thank you for listening and see you next Friday.